Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM. My name is Magus Teevil. Joining me in the studio today are
Peter R.H.
and Stephen Fan.
And we got a good show for you lined up today. Today is the first day of Fun Drive, and we are, in fact, the first show of Fun Drive. If you don't know what Fun Drive is, Fun Drive is our annual fundraising campaign where we ask listeners like you to support the station in all the things we do throughout the year. We are a community radio station. We focus our programming on community. We are a nonprofit. We get a bunch of funding from the students here at SFU, but of course we don't serve just SFU or the students at SFU. We serve the entire Vancouver community and region. And that's where you come in as a listener, a community listener. We're looking to you to help support the station and what we do, and we need your help. Running a radio station is not a cheap affair, and we have some big expenses coming up. We're going to be replacing our transmitting tower sometime this fall. It's going to cost a whack load of money. We are working hard to expand our community news reporting so that we can serve you better as a community. And you know, the other part of our funding I mentioned from students hasn't changed in a lot of years, so we're feeling the pinch of that, and that's where you can come in and help us out. So please make a contribution to the station. You can go to our donation page, which is at cjsf.ca/donate. Or if you like, you can text DONATE to our number here, 778-782-2573. That's 778-782-2573. Text the word DONATE to that, and you will get a text back with a link to the donation page. You can go there and make a donation, $35, $50, $70. If you donate at the $90 and 10 cent level, you will get a really nice limited edition print. You can go and see that on our website, on our Fun Drive website at cjsffundrive.ca. So please go to the website, support your community radio so we can come back to you here every week with all the programming we have throughout the week. That would be amazing. And I'd really urge you to do that now. Our goal is $10,000, and we're really excited to be doing this fundraising drive this week and are looking for your support. So please head to the website, cjsf.ca/donate, to make a donation right now. All right, we got a bunch of stuff lined up for you on the show today. We have a report from Danny Nesvadarani about efforts to bring in a bylaw in Burnaby to discourage folks from feeding wildlife, and all because that creates a lot of problems. Stephen Fan is here, and we're going to be talking about tariffs and stuff.
Yeah, just the world economic issues to some extent, I think.
And those, of course, top of mind today because the ongoing tariff war between the United States and most of the rest of the country. But we're kind of in the thick of it here in Canada.
And it's an existential issue for Canada as well.
It is.
And Peter? So, actually, I'm going to bring up something that it's not going to be this. I'm going to do on media. I went to a an event by the communications department in SFU, and I'm going to be talking about how sometimes in the internet it's hard to get the right information. You have to be wary of that, and a few other things about media. I got something on Time magazine here, but this is something I just heard on Sunday. Yep. That Canada and the Philippines sign a status of visiting forces agreement. And I just heard it actually on CBC Radio on Sunday morning. And I didn't have really much of a chance to sort of do any background on it. The Philippines is sort of a involved situation. A lot of Canadian mining firms are exploiting them, I feel. So this is actually quite new. This is from the Government of Canada news release, November 2nd. So this is November 3rd. Today, that was on a Sunday, the Canadian Minister of National Defense and the Philippine Secretary of National Defense signed a status of visiting forces agreement between Canada and the Philippines. This agreement builds on the Canada-Philippines Defense Cooperation Memorandum of Understanding signed in January 2024.
So you're going to talk more about that later, too?
Maybe a little bit. I just have what's on the thing there.
Okay. Great. That's coming up in the last 15 minutes of the show. And, of course, just after the half hour, we have Gardening with Embark. All that more coming up here on Speak Up here on CJSF. We're going to start the program off, though, with a report from Danny Nesvadarani about Burnaby Council being solicited to create a bylaw to manage feeding of wildlife by Burnaby residents and the problems it causes.
The Fur Bearers are a Canada-wide nonprofit based in British Columbia that focuses on the welfare of wildlife and how humans and animals can more sustainably coexist. On September 25th, the organization sent a letter to Burnaby City Council highlighting the need for a wildlife feeding bylaw in the city of Burnaby. This letter was supported by Simon Fraser University, which recently reported over 100 complaints filed on its Burnaby campus regarding raccoon behavior and activity in the last 2 years. They attribute these complaints to persistent feeding of the raccoons by some of the general public on campus, and while the university has claimed to have utilized numerous educational tools to communicate the importance of not feeding wildlife, its current methods are not having the desired effect. For this reason, the Fur Bearers, alongside SFU, are advocating for a bylaw to be passed that would allow for enforcement action to address the issue of wildlife feedings on campus and throughout the city of Burnaby. To learn more about the bylaw, as well as what this proposed enforcement may look like, CJSF spoke with Tiana Selleck, the Fur Bearers Wildlife Campaigns and Advocacy Manager, on how this bylaw proposal came to be.
So this is something that both the Fur Bearers and SFU itself are really behind. The university has let us know they've received over 100 complaints in the past 2 years about people feeding raccoons on campus. Our organization has also had community members reach out to us for support. Like you mentioned, lots of students on campus who are encountering wildlife, witnessing feeding events. And then there have also been unfortunate incidents nearby, like the black bear that was killed near SFU in September after becoming food conditioned. So these are all really clear examples of how feeding creates problems. So by supporting our call for a municipal bylaw, SFU is essentially recognizing the importance of equipping the city with a necessary mechanism to help them address the issue.
Next, we asked what they hope this bylaw is able to accomplish.
So the goal here really is to change behavior. Typically, enforcement starts with education-based warnings. So giving people a chance to understand why feeding wildlife is harmful and adjust their actions accordingly. And what we hope is that once people understand that feeding of wildlife does pose risks and harms these animals long term, we're hoping that the behavior changes. But if it continues, the bylaw would give officers the ability to issue tickets as a deterrent to stop that behavior before it escalates into a bigger issue like we saw with that bear. So right now the city is relying on education alone, and it hasn't been successful in solving the problem. So this next step of enforcement is essentially just providing a necessary tool to shift that behavior in a way that will protect both the community and the wildlife within it.
Afterwards, we discuss what some of the negative effects are when it comes to feeding wildlife, whether it be on SFU's Burnaby campus or throughout the city.
So the biggest thing is feeding wildlife, whether that's directly or indirectly by leaving food out. It's teaching these animals to rely on people for food. They're also losing their natural and frankly necessary caution of us, which can lead them to bolder and riskier behavior, such as approaching people for food in the future, approaching people's homes, that sort of thing. Additionally, other wildlife may be drawn into the area, resulting in overcrowding, like you mentioned, lots of wildlife on the campus. Also increased disease transmission from us to them and vice versa. And ultimately a higher likelihood of negative human-wildlife encounters that unfortunately often end fatally for the animals involved. So it's just, it's unsafe for both people and wildlife long-term.
At the end of our conversation, Tiana Selleck left us with this piece of advice.
So we understand that the intention often comes from a good place, and feeding wildlife might feel like it's helping, but it really does harm animals. It's putting them at risk of injury, malnutrition, disease, and ultimately being destroyed. So true compassion means doing what's best for the animal long term, and the best way to care for wildlife is to let them stay wild. So what people can do that will make a really big difference is giving wildlife their space, not leaving food unattended on campus or in parks, properly storing away their garbage and their compost, and removing any attractants like pet food or bird feeders, that sort of thing. So really important not to feed them intentionally or unintentionally and to allow them to stay wild. And what we would really encourage people to do is continue to enjoy wildlife, but in a way that's compassionate and respectful. So this could be things like birding, volunteering with local rescues, engaging in citizen science initiatives, and supporting wildlife-friendly policies. So lots of great ways to enjoy wildlife that ensure safe coexistence for us and for them down the line.
Once again, that was our conversation with Tiana Selleck, the Wildlife Campaigns and Advocacy Manager for the Fur Bears, who are currently advocating for a wildlife feeding bylaw in the city of Burnaby. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
So the Local Journalism Initiative is one of the funding sources that CJSF relies on, and it particularly funds our local reporter, and allowing us to expand our community coverage. We also rely on support from other grants that we apply for, and the support of SFU students. But we're also looking at you, our listeners, you listening at home right now, for support as well. As a community radio station, we aim to serve the community and provide a kind of programming and a kind of radio that isn't available elsewhere. And I think we do a really good job of that. There's a lot of extraordinary programs here on CJSF that are worth listening to. And it takes resources to bring that to you. Money resources, of course, and that's where you can help us out with a donation today. But also people resources. We have a small staff here, but also a large crew of volunteers who put in their time every week to bring you great programming in the studio today. Our two volunteers, Stephen Fan and Peter R.H., who are here giving of themselves to bring you information and programming that hopefully you are enjoying. So you can make a donation today by going to our donation page, cjsf.ca/donate, or send us a text at 778-782-2573. Text us the word donate to that number. That's 782-CJSF on your keypad. You will get a text back with a link to the donation page, and you can go there and make a donation right now. We'd love to see a donation of $100 or $120 if you can afford that. We're here every week, and if you're listening on the regular, we'd love to get your support. All right, Stephen Fan,
Yeah, so I think some interesting events have taken place with regard to U.S.-Canadian trade relations. I think everyone's kind of aware that, you know, Doug Ford did his thing, you know, ran that ad.
Yep, ran an ad using Ronald Reagan to, well, Ronald Reagan's words about his position on tariffs.
Yes. Me and Meg just talked about that last week, and we ran the entire five-minute radio address. It used to be that Reagan at least did it every week for about 5 minutes.
We
ran the entire thing.
Yeah.
I think there are some different angles to this, because I think the mainstream analysis of this stuff is, in my view, somewhat erroneous and not misguided, but tends to sensationalize why I think Trump reacted the way he did. I think there are some very specific angles here. The first thing is, okay, I got to illustrate this with a moment where Trump was on Air Force One and some reporter was asking him about the ad, and Trump is like, you know, I knew Ronald Reagan, you know, Ronald Reagan loved tariffs, and obviously that's like true. That's not true. But why did Trump react so suddenly and so strongly against this particular slight and in such an escalatory fashion? And by which I mean that when he initially saw it that Wednesday night, he was like, oh, you know, I don't agree with it, but I understand why the Canadians are doing what they're doing. And then suddenly the next day it was like, we're canceling the negotiations, we're slapping a 10% tariff on Canada. And a friend of mine who actually studies this stuff, he's a political strategist in the United States for the Democratic Party. He messaged me and he was like, look, this is the Reagan ad became explosive not because it was like anti-tariffs or used Reagan's words, but it touched a very fundamental and you could argue existential issue for Trump of party management, right? In the sense that Trump has very successfully gotten the entirety of the Republican Party, more or less, to line up behind him, behind his MAGA, Make America Great Again program, his America First program. And here is, you know, like Doug Ford, you know, pretty sure not knowing what he's doing, but, you know, he's like bumping around, announcing this, doing this sort of like, you could say a pincer movement of like, we're going to use a Republican, you know, demigod's words against Trump. Well, there's a real risk of splitting his coalition.
Right.
And that's a very existential risk to Trump in a way, you know, I disagree with, quote-unquote, I disagree with President Trump on tariffs is not.
Well, it sort of highlights the very sudden shift that the Republican Party under Trump has made on the position of tariffs, because the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and more broadly the whole Western sort of political consensus has really shifted towards, for the most part, free trade
to some extent,
the last 40 years.
In the broad sense, yes.
Yeah.
But obviously in the last, I would say, 8 or so years, there's been a shift in, you could call it the U.S. establishment regards to, in terms of trade with China and so forth. But I agree with you, there's a broad consensus in terms of freer trade. I think the problem comes in not necessarily on trade, but on related issues, right? In the sense that Trump has been able to suppress a lot of dissent in the United States regarding his leadership, essentially by using a lot of the existing structure to clamp down on it. I think to the extent, you know, someone could like essentially use Canada as a cipher to do all these things, to essentially use Reagan's words against Trump, well, what stops Bill Kristol or Victoria Nuland from using Canada as a cipher on Ukraine, on national security, on Europe, on China? The list goes on. There's like, once you succeed in one specific instance of this side kind of maneuver, pincer movement in endeavor, it's a very genuine risk for Trump. So I think Trump was rational. I don't endorse it, but he was rational to react as he did. I know one of the rare moments of rationality in his presidency, actually. But and this is like infuriating to us, to Canadians. But I cannot see how he could have acted any other way if he was to persist with his program. Because, you know, like, there are a lot of very unhappy never-Trumpers within the Republican Party. you know, it's not that hard for them to call up Doug Ford and run another ad on TV about this or that. It's just not that hard. So, and that was kind of my angle on this.
Couldn't they do this themselves, though? I mean, you know, if in the scale of U.S. fundraising, $75 million isn't that much political
fundraising. It's not about the sums. It's the fact, for example, CBS is currently undergoing merger review by the Justice Department regarding by acquisition by Paramount by Skydance.
Yeah.
So they have been very careful not only to broadcast Trump-friendly content, but also not to broadcast Trump-unfriendly content. But obviously, the semi-sovereign government of Ontario doing this stuff, it's just kind of a different set of questions. It's kind of a different kind of worms. And it's just like a different order of problems. That's one issue. The other issue, and this doesn't have anything to do with Trump, but it is related to the trade discussions, is I have a friend who's a hedge fund manager who monitors this stuff very, very closely because U.S.-Canadian trade relations is a big part of what he covers. And he messaged me in the middle of this. He pointed me to a clip saying by Doug Ford being interviewed by TV reporters, and the reporter was asking him, hey, Danielle Smith is not reacting against these. She's not running these ads. And Doug Ford very specifically was like, hey, she doesn't have the auto industry to lose. She doesn't have the steel and aluminum manufacturing industry to lose. She doesn't have, in his words, life sciences industries to lose. Now, I do think he's exaggerating, but I think he actually gets
it. It's already we're seeing the effect on the auto industry.
Yeah, I do. It is having an effect on the auto industry. But actually, I think the most illustrative example is the closure of furniture factories, both in Vancouver and Delta, for example, and also recently, like last week in Toronto, in suburban Toronto. And I think this gets at a fundamental tension that's existed at the heart of NAFTA or CUSMA or whatever it is for really like its entire existence. Which is that NAFTA really has like three. It's like a stool that has three legs. Yeah. The first leg is free trade, like goods and services can enter freely between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. The second one is free movement of capital, so investors can from any of the three countries can invest in any of the other three countries, and there is a fair and reasonable, equitable adjudication process if investor assets were to be seized. The third part of the stool, and this is the part that has really worked out least well for Canada, is supply chain integration. Supply chain integration, you know, the word supply chain has been thrown around a lot, but what it means is that, like, I can have a car that's kind of, you know, partly assembled in Canada and moves across the border to Detroit, gets, you know, painted, and then moves back to Canada again to get the engine installed and back and forth. Like, during the Brexit discussions, one thing they pointed out was, like, if you look at the Guinness factory, it moves across the border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, like, 1,000 times before it gets finished.
This is to make...
Just to make a can of beer or a car or whatever. So that is very different from just, like, free trade where like I ship you an iPad.
There's one tariff transaction when you ship a finished product, but here we're moving back and forth.
And I think to some extent, this is kind of deep Ottawa lore, and partly this is just speculative. I think the opinion in sort of elite Ottawa has been for quite some time now, really at least a decade, that supply chain integration doesn't really work. And, you know, we'll keep going with it if that's what the Americans want. But if the Americans want to give us an out, we should take the out. And what I mean by this is it's fairly profound, right? Like, in the sense that there's two things to consider, and I'll be very quick about it. The first thing is the logic of supply chain integration is really different places in the value chain, right? So in the auto sector, the idea is that Mexico will do some of the lower value stuff, Canada will do some of the mid-value stuff, and a lot of the really high-value stuff will get done in America.
Right.
Because wages are a little bit lower in Canada, but also healthcare costs are substantially lower in Canada. So it's just like there's a cost advantage. Right. But, of course, the problem is that as Canadians, we never get to move up to the top end of the supply chain. So, for example, Magna International, which is the biggest auto parts supplier in the world, it is a Canadian company, they do really advanced subcontracting assembly for BMW entire model lines in Austria, in Europe, in their European operations. They don't get to do any of that in Canada or the United States because, again, there's such segregation in value engineering that Canada doesn't get.
So as a concern, well, we got a call coming in, but...
yeah, please.
Well, I'm not going to take it on. I can't take it right on air, but we will... take a brief break. Here's, and we'll return to this conversation with a question of what is the downside to supply side or supply chain
integration?
Yeah, there's
a second thing as well. Yeah.
This is Bird Note. The sights and sounds of birds visiting a feeder in the backyard or a local park can brighten our days during the darker months of the year. And if you want to take your experience to the next level, you can contribute to science just by keeping track of birds at a feeder. Project Feeder Watch is a community science project organized by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and Birds Canada. Thousands of people across North America help gather data on over 100 species of birds that spend their winters on the continent. From November through April, participants make lists of the birds they see at a bird feeder, bird-friendly garden, or water feature whenever they get the chance, and submit those lists online. It's that simple. You might think an activity so simple couldn't possibly make a difference. But the data from Project Feeder Watch have already helped sound the alarm about declines in bird species, track the spread of disease among wintering bird flocks, and note shifts in the ranges of bird species throughout the colder months. Through efforts like Project Feeder Watch, we can become the eyes and ears of bird conservation. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Rimmel. BirdNote is grateful to all listeners who provide financial support for this show. You can join them at birdnote.org.
All right, and we're back. And that is our first donation of the show. So thank you to that caller. We'll thank you by name in a few minutes when they've finished taking that information. So that's really exciting. We are in the middle of Fund Drive here at CJSF. It starts today and runs all week through Sunday, November 9th. And we'd love it if you call or go to our website, cjsffunddrive.ca, where you can find out more information about the fund drive this year and what we're asking for and how you can make a donation. So please hit the phone or hit that website. And we'd be happy to do it. So we're going to pick up our conversation. We are right in the middle there, Stephen, of talking about what is the downsides of
supply chain integration under NAFTA.
So. Sorry, wrong microphone. Supply chain integration under NAFTA. And so what is Ottawa, the Ottawa elite see as?
Thank you so much for your donation.
Here we go. What do you see as? The downside here? Are they concerned that we're being cut out of that sort of better end of?
The problem with supply chain integration is that you can only do it once.
Yeah.
So what I mean by that is that in the European Union, for example, the European Union is the single most integrated macro major economic entity, supranational international entity in the world, and it means, for example, in auto manufacturing, that a German manufacturer would always have to go to Poland or Czechia first and vice versa. Now, in the context of Canada, what that means is that it really privileges domestic big three auto manufacturers for the auto sector because it kind of essentially locks out the international manufacturers. Like, to some extent, Toyota and Honda have established operations in North America. But
they're mostly just assembly plants.
They're mostly assembly plants, but they, to some extent, in successive negotiations, the U.S. administration have actually really tremendously privileged the big three of Detroit. Now, traditionally, this was not such a problem in the sense that the North American auto market is generally considered the most lucrative auto market in the world, and the big three are strong, they're well capitalized, they have good technology. Well, I don't know if any of these things are true anymore. The problem is the big three, they're not really at the leading edge of technology and haven't been for a while, right? They have been not at the leading edge of technology for fuel-efficient internal combustion vehicles against the Japanese manufacturers for at least a decade.